I want to finish, and we'll complete today, the 33rd chapter of Numbers. And I want to make sure that we get a pattern. Let me get my notes out of here. We ended on verse 28 in Numbers, number 33. Now, the reason I've been trying to put together in my mind and my thinking, why is it that God specifically told Moses to write down these places? And so we go through this. We may not make a complete picture of what it's all about, but when God just didn't say, write history for the sake of history, but God has you write something down, especially Moses, there must be a reason behind it that we need to have a bigger picture. And I think maybe we may not have a complete, I don't have a complete picture of everything going on. I showed you some of the things that are very obvious with the names and the names of the places, because names of the places are just like what happened tells you what took place. Not necessarily at that point, perhaps, because there's sometimes a name has been changed because it had become a community later on, and they changed the name. Why it was changed, I cannot answer the question. But you know, the men of the Great Assembly, how many of you know who the men of the Great Assembly are? One person? It's Ezra. There was 120 men who were put together what we have known as the Tanakh. That happened during Ezra's time. And he was given a commandment by whom? No.
Oh, by the king.
By the king. What was his name? Cyrus. Cyrus the king. He's the one that gave the order for Ezra to compile as much information as he possibly could compile and research it. So he's getting carte blanche, so he says that terminology today, to be able to research these things. And so basically, sometimes he'll, because he would done the research, knew what the location was, may not have known what the name was at one time, but getting together. Now remember, the book of Moses, quote, book of Moses, the five gospels, first books of the Bible, were written in ancient Hebrew writings. And very few people could even, by the time of Ezra, could even put together what those words meant. They understood the language, they understood the letters, but how to put together and what they really were saying was a difficult thing. So they had a task in mind, and I think God helped in that pattern. And we don't know all the pictures. Okay. Now, we ended on verse 27 about... Tahath, which was also meaning delay, or it's also the name of Abram's father. Now, verse 28, the next place they met was...
Milcah.
Or Michpah. And there it means sweetness or to become sweet or pleasing. So they went from the delay place, went to another place that had to do with sweet or pleasing or pleasant place to be. 29, they went to another place to was Kashmoha means fatness or fertile. So the area was very plentiful, a lot of good things, and the land was very, very prosperous. And it means basically those who are fat, meaning not fat, but those who are noble, those who are fruitful or positive, they did a very good production, or whatever they did great. It has to do with the Egyptian concept, the Ethiopian concept as well, and had to reach out, that God had reached out their hand to them. That's why fatness, when someone has been, you've been fat of the land, because God has reached out his hand and made the land fat, or made the land prosperous, made the land profitable. That's what that kind of word means in Hebrew. The next encampment Moserat, that's a plurality meaning bonds that would be bound together. But it has to do with being corrected and chastisement and discipline and instruction. The next place they went to is Bnei Yachon. Now, it's funny, it says the literal translation means sons of twisting, because that's what the word comes from. And it says, let him oppress them. Now, kind of tell me, went to a place. And there was this thing of oppression or a correction. Something had to be done. God had them go to that place for a reason. Generally, a place is named after the situation, not before. In fact, I think every single time it's always named after a situation and not before. This is the event. What was the event called? And they called it that. We're going to go through this real quickly because I want to run through the very beginning of just the words that we have learned and try to understand more as we keep on going. Okay, the next place they went to is Kor Hagdidad. This means, basically, literally means the cavern of Gilead, but it's a place meaning a slashing place or a place to cut, to attack, to invade. So some would tell you that particular location was what's called Gideon because that became the land of Gideon after a while. This is where the name came afterwards, not before. But they had the first part of it there where it had to do with something to take place of an invasion or something took place in sense of an attack. Something happened there. We don't know what it is. And it doesn't matter. We're just trying to figure out what the names mean. The next place, verse 33, Yobachtah, which means pleasantness, a good place, a pleasing place, just much like the other one, but a different phrase, means to be glad, to be happy, to be something where the people are happy and to be there. Something happened very positive there. So what we're learning here, if I could put it this way, that sometimes in our minds, we have this concept of, well, 40 years in the wilderness, and God was punishing them every single location, every single place, No. There are times he punished, times he blessed, times he gave abundance, and times he took away. Does that sound like life, normal life? So we're looking at what God does, not what the people did, but what God does. And these words help us to understand the actions and the mind and the pattern of how God deals with it. So we see a repetition sometimes, the very same thing, different words, but things seem to have a pattern going on to the thing. There's a correction that takes place, sometimes a very negative thing, very harsh thing, and then maybe a pleasant place, a more peaceful place, where God is giving now mercy and understanding and compassion. And the next one, he comes on, and maybe it's even a second great blessing, a greater one, because they're responding, but not always. So we see a pattern here. You understand what I'm talking about, right? That's how God thinks, how God works. It's very, very important that we kind of go through that. And the next place they went to is called Avarona, which basically means a passage. It comes from the word Hebron. Remember her, Hebron? Okay, Hebron, what does Hebron mean? It means an alliance. Remember? Remember when Abram had to go to war? He had to have an alliance with three other men. And they were brothers. And they went to war. And Abraham wasn't strong enough of them by himself, so he had to make an alliance or an agreement with these other ones to go to war, and they went to war with him. But it has to do with passage also, going to a region beyond. And what happened here is they're going through now a place where they are going to pass through. It's like a passageway. It's like a narrow gate or a narrow area where the people had to pass through. But to find it, we go on. There's very fascinating words that come through almost identical in its meaning as we keep on going. Verse 25. Etzion Gever. Literally means the backbone of a man. Okay. I went to do the research on it, and I found out the other place where it's located, and it's very fascinating. It means that to shut up and to make firm means a man who is strong in war. So it kind of tells you what happened here was there probably was a war and ability to fight, and a strong one, backbone of a man. We use that phrase in our English, right? Where's your backbone? All right? Be a man, stand up, do your job. You know, backbone means you're doing something of strength and of power. You have the endurance to be able to handle these things. So it looked like God brought them to a place where they had to go to war. Well, remember, they had gone to war before. As they went toward the very end, remember the two kings up in north of Moab? The two kings that they went to war with, and guess who got the land? All right. Remember? Reuben and Gideon and the other half of Gad, rather, and the other half of Manasseh. So that's probably, in one way, an area we're looking at this place. Yeah, they went to war. And maybe that's where this particular verse of 35 is referring back to. The war and a strong back, strong ones going to war, and they did. And you remember, not every man went to war. Just the ones who were strong enough to do the war. And most of them that went there would, of course, my personal opinion, would be from the house of Reuben and the house of Gad, and probably the house of Manasseh, or part of Manasseh, because Manasseh is broken up in two different groups. One was known as a warrior group, and that was known as a peaceful group. So probably they were on the war part of it, on the other side of Jordan. That's my thinking. I have no idea whether it's true or not. But it's kind of interesting that they went there, and they had something to do with the fighting ability to fight. Then they left that place. They went back into the wilderness of Zion, which we talked about that before. Now, in this particular place, it's very interesting. It's kind of odd in its termination, because later on, it was named Kadesh. That is the sanctuary. I do not know where it would be. I'm guessing it probably was on the other side of Jordan. It may be, maybe not. I do not know. I'm not going to come close to it. But that part of Scripture talks about, remember I told you what wilderness comes from? What? Wilderness comes from what Hebrew word? Devar. Means words. Remember I used Devarim, Elohim? Words. So every time you see the word wilderness, the core of that word, noun, is Devar. Something is talking to you. Somebody is, or some, in this case, God is talking to you. And the wilderness of sin, which is not the sin, S-E-N, but S-Z-I-N, which has to be a place of thorn or place of clay. Thorn and or clay, or maybe both. Now, so we have here, they put back into a place after they went to war, and God now puts them back into another location, and now they're at a place where there's thorns and clay. Thorns and thistles, you know, that's not good news, is it? So after their victory, now God has another picture showing us where he wants to take it. And what did he do there? He actually talked with them. Now we think literally talking. God is a show and tell speaker. Everything you find in the Bible, show and tell, almost every single. One time he talked one-to-one, it's with Moses, directly. And sometimes in visions and dreams to certain prophets and certain great men and certain righteous men. But most of the time it's show and tell. Look at Adam. Show and tell, show and tell, show and tell. He showed him the garden, and guess what? Dress it and keep it. Oh, how do you do that? Show and tell, show and tell, show and tell. He wasn't a botanist. He had to learn to be a botanist. And then we had to name all the animals. And he says, okay, show and tell. What's that animal, what's that creature doing? It's doing this. What's its name? And Adam says, I'll give it that name. Okay, good. And from that point on, God says, now that's the name of it. that Adam saw the action of the being or the creature, and he gave a name to it because of what it was doing, not because of what it looked like. How could you describe something that looks like, unless you know what it's doing? You're like, give a common word, fly. Everybody knows what a fly is, right? What do? Fly. Why do you call it a fly? Because it flies. What's it do? Yeah, bugs me, but it's a fly. It just flies. And so we have this very simple little word for an insect we call in English a fly. And it's because that's what it does. All around, flies, 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 flies. Never seems to go anywhere. It just flies, 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 flies. But it's kind of funny when you show that. And so in your world, in your life, now, did Dave mention something today, which I'm very glad he did. Because basically, when God shows you what he has given you as a task, he doesn't tell you, he shows you. And what do? You start working in it, and you start working with it. In this case, he started working with his hands. He started working with furniture or cabinets. Started working that way. Show and tell, show and tell. Someone had to show him, and that told him, and he did it. That's a talent. It's a gift. And you learn that that's how God, and that's how you work for the Lord, by the way. And he did good description today about worship in Hebrew, because that's what you do. Love the Lord your God with all your, and all your, and all your, and all your strength, might, work. What you do is what proves that you are loving God. Okay? And then he went to another place called, interesting place, Mount Hahor. Mount Hahor. Or Hor Hahor. Hor Hahor. Which literally means, mountain of the mountain. What happened there? Do you remember? A very important man died on that mountain. Aaron died on that mountain. That's why it's called in Hebrew Hor Hahor, meaning that's the mountain that Aaron died on. That's why it's so important. Why is the mountain? Why should it be called Hor Hahor? The mountain, the mountain, emphasizing Aaron. And he had to die on a mountain, not in a valley, not in the gutter, but on a high place. And the people did mourn his death. He's a very, very important man. And sometimes we have a tendency to look at his, quote, fault, and can't understand why God ever dealt with a man because of his fault. Guess what? He made a mistake. He sinned. He transgressed. He didn't do his job. Oh. Did that ever happen to anybody else? Now, God wasn't mad at him, though, was he? He wasn't mad at somebody else. Remember who he was mad at? Miriam. Right? Because she instituted the whole thing. I'm after you. And he did it. And we could say, wow, God's unfair. Well, no. God says he knows exactly the heart of everybody. Now, he was 40, at the 40th year, this is the 40th year they were there. After they left Egypt, the time they left Egypt, at this point, this is the 40th year, it's within that 40th year, not the completion of it. And it's on the fifth month of that year. Moses died on the 11th month of that year. Died quickly, didn't they? Not too far apart. Aaron died at 123. Moses died at 120. So it was the same year. Because way back at the very beginning, Aaron was 3 years older than Moses from the very beginning of the book of Exodus. So we know they would have had to die in the very same year. And after they left Hodor Hahodor, they went to another place called Zil-Maha, which is a very unusually odd definition. I had to really look at this thing. I said, that's weird. Because the meaning means death. It means like the grave, but a different word. This very same word is used in Psalms 88, 14 to 18. I don't want to read there, but it's in there. It says, I have suffered talking. This person is talking, or Korah. The sons of Korah wrote this psalm. And in there, one of the lines was, Yahuwah, why cast thou off my soul? Why hide thy face from me? I am afflicted and ready to die from my youth up. While I suffer thy terrors, I am distracted. In Hebrew, it means I am perplexed. I'm in the world of darkness. That's the next place they stopped at. Oh, backtrack on 31. You know, if there's a song of, though I walk through the valley of death. The same word, by the way, I missed that on it. Zalahara is there in that Psalm 23rd. Though I walk through the valley of death, though I walk through the valley of grave. And we know that Yeshua was in the valley of grave, wasn't he? And so we have a picture here of something. I don't have a picture completely. We see a pattern that we go through. In verse 43, another unusual word, but not that odd. They went to Punon. All that word means is darkness. Punon means darkness. Then they went to another place called Avot. It means water skins, or literally translated, means a water skin bottle. That's where they got water. They packed, put water into their containers, and for the next trip, the next journey they were going to go to. Now, let me ask you a question. Okay? What does water represent?
Life.
The what?
The Spirit
of God, always. So these people were getting ready to go in the Promised Land. And the younger generation have already been pretty loyal and understood an awful lot of stuff. And they were more dedicated, and God had that in mind before they went into the place. So they were actually getting bottles of water. I'm not saying that's what took place, but it's fascinating to use this thing of they're collecting water for some reason. And what the next place was this Ayin HaRavim, which means ruins of Aran, a ruin, a heap, a bad place. They went through a bad place where there was something happened there, and I don't know what. Something became a ruin. Something became destroyed. Don't know what it is. We don't know, but God took them through that place, or took them to that place, and they left. And what they left was, it was a place that was ruined, destroyed. Wiped out. I don't know why. God has said, I'm telling you, Moses, write these down. And so Moses did. And we left from there, they went to Divon Gad, which means the Gad, the city of the people of Gad, but means a wasting away, pining away. All right. At this point in time, they're ready to enter. This is after Aaron died. Now, we have a couple of negative things here, don't we? What do you think might have been taking place? He said not one of the men who did not go to war walked against me at the time of going into the Promised Land will not enter into the Promised Land.
They were dying.
Well, that one, previous one? Grave, or walk the valley of death. Grave. Dying. This is what the Jewish people have a thought. It's kind of funny all by itself. But it was kind of like, not that thought, but I read it in one of the rabbis, as he, I had a tongue-in-cheek statement. And he says, here there were the younger people waiting to get across. They couldn't get across. And he said, okay, Dad, Mom, we're doing great. Just lie in it. Tell you did. They're being funny about Dave because they're being tongue-in-cheek, waiting for the parents to dead so they can get in there. But it was, nonetheless, it kind of like maybe, but look at these two places so far, right? A lot of death. Graves. Valley of death. Now, that's not a very good sight, is it? Not a very good, pleasant place. And then, of course, they left there and went back to the very same place previously of the Avaron, that of the wasteland, the place that was the waste. And then the verse 49. They pitched by Jordan. Now, Bet Ha Yashemot. And even unto Avel Hashitim. The first one is House of the Desolation. Wow. Something was being destroyed again. Unto the Meadow of Acacia. You know they used acacia wood for the tabernacle? So more than likely, they probably had cut new acacia wood for the new tabernacle for the wood being decomposes and has to be redone, and maybe they had to do some work on it. Now, that being said, I just want to go a couple more things. And God says, verse 53, that ye shall drive them out of the inhabitants of the land before you, and destroy their pictures, they destroy all their molten images, and all the, tear down their places of high places. And down in verse 35, he says, but if you will not drive out the inhabitants, it's interesting terminology. He didn't say if you didn't kill them. If you don't drive them out, I will drive you out. That's a pretty heavy statement, right? Okay, with all that being said, what are we learning? We have heard, or you have mentioned, that they list, some people say there's 42 specific locations. Well, I can see how they get 42. I come up with 40. I'll explain to you why. The first place that they list, which really isn't a place, it's what they came from. They were left out, and that was Ramses, or Ramses, which means Ray created it. Okay, that's all that word means. Then they went to place, first place is Sukkot. It's a booth, a thicket, to cover, to protect. To fence in and to cover. Second place is called Etam. It means it's in Hebrew, best way to do it, it's a sewer or it's a range. It can be a range of mountains or border between this and that. And Etam was the one that was the last place before they entered into the wilderness before they crossed the Red Sea. Remember that? So that area would be called Sinai Peninsula, it was a place of wilderness. There was nothing there. There is no fruit. There's no trees. There's no land. There's no, you can't even raise cattle there. It's just a desert, not even a desert, a mountainous place that has no value in a sense of a place to live. So they went through that wilderness. And the third place was Migdol. You know where Migdol was? Where's Migdol? Well, you remember that they had to go to this place called the Cove, and it was where rivers were, the mouth of the river was, had dried up, no water was coming anymore. And they had to have two mountains they had to look at. And God told them to go to the northern section. And an east wind came and dried out the Red Sea. Migdol. Okay? And that basically doesn't have any really significant meaning, except that in Hebrew it means a tower. Big, huge mountain, a tower. But what really was happening there, because you can look at history, and we have history, it was the last stronghold, the very far extreme stronghold of the Egyptian military. That's why they knew where to go. They knew exactly where they were going. When they were caught, oh, I knew. The Pharaoh knew exactly where they were at. All of them knew where they were at because that was their last fortified fort, tower, their strong point. It wasn't really a puzzlement for them to where it was at and how to get there. And that's why they got there so fast. They knew where it was at. Now from there we went to Mara, which is where we had the bitter water. And what was it? What was the lesson behind it? I am your healer. Right? Then he went to Elim, which is a place near the crossing of the Red Sea. And it was a place where what was taking place there? The second place they actually camped.
Is that the don't go back?
No. You remember the what?
Fountains of water were there.
12 fountains of water there and 12 palm trees. Okay. First, a place where the water is going to kill you. All right. Now, the water was changed, wasn't it? And the water gave them
life.
All right. How did the water give them life? By a tree being cast, or something from the tree being cast into this deadly water, and the water became living water. Wow. Quite a picture, right? Everything that ever happens is how God works this way. He always works this way. The next encampment was, of course, the Red Sea. And that was like saying, oh, you know, go back to the Red Sea. Okay. Look over there. You can't cross the sea anymore. Because what? It's all covered up now. Passageway is completely covered up. Can't go back. And then it went to the wilderness of sin again. Or this wilderness of sin. And this one here has to do with what I said before. It had to do with a thorny place. A place of wilderness where things couldn't grow. It also is it could be an open field. Like watching the History Channel. I mean, not History Channel, but maybe it was the Weather Channel anyway. Some of our Midwestern states, I mean, no one really can live there. Tornadoes come, wipe people out, kill them off, right? And they can't live there very much. Then, you know, yeah, a few people scattered here, that little town there, that little town. But the mass property, no one really lives there. I was in Wyoming. I mean, it's one of the smallest populated states, but you can't live there. That's just nothing but open land. You can't even put cattle on it. It wouldn't even work. It's actually, in a sense, it's out there in the middle of nowhere. Then they went to a place called Dophkin. That means, that we talked about this last time, as the knocking or the beating or driving, being driven severely. So after he talked with them in the wilderness, now he's knocking them or telling them and driving them to severity, which they probably did. And then they, Alush, and it says, I will knead. Yes. Like you do bread. After he punches him down a little bit, now I go back and I got to work with you now. It's funny, but now, my wife made bread before. Believe it or not. And when she puts it together, and she really beats on it, punches it down, then she walks away. Then she comes back and she starts kneading with it. I mean, hey, first you got to beat it up, then you got to knead it. It's kind of funny terminology. Is that not how God works with us as individuals?
Sometimes, yeah.
It's like God chastises those he loves. He did to the whole house of Israel. and Rafidim. Remember what that was at? Before they left. Tom, so what? It's a resting place? Okay. Technically, it means what? Holding up, supporting the arms. Who the arms was being supported? Okay, that's where that name really came from. That's what that name means. Why did they have to have his arms up in the air for? There was a battle going on. How did they win the battle? Long as that rod was up in the air. Now, that tells us that Moses was not strong enough to endure it. And so, a couple old men, his brother and Kanahur, held him up for it. They actually got a stone. They moved a stone there for him to sit down on top of, because it's hard for him to keep standing, you know, and it was all the way until sunset. It's a long time. So that terminology came from. Then we come to, see where I'm at now. They went back now to the wilderness of Sinai. What happened in Sinai? What?
The Ten Commandments.
Ten Commandments was given on Mount Sinai. What's Sinai mean?
Hedge.
What?
Thorny.
Thorny place. Not negative. I'm putting a thorny place around about. I'm putting a fence around about you. And the fence is this. Stay within the Ten Commandments.
Yeah.
Stay within them. I will protect you from any outside source. Stay within the commandments. That's a simplicity, right? And then there was another place called Kivo Ot Hahabet. Habaha. Kivrot Habata. You remember what happened there? It was after they had all this stuff and they began to complain. Actually, one of the times they complained, so I think it was the second time they complained. But something happened there.
They buried their dead.
The what?
They had to bury their dead.
They had to bury their dead. Because the place of the name was Grave of Lust. What were they lusting after?
Meat.
Now they had meat.
But they didn't want to eat that meat.
They wanted birds. I guess they wanted fowl. And they got it, a lot of it. And then, of course, a lot of people died that day. So, the quail from the sea. Remember, the quail came from the sea. So it came from the west to the east. All right. Then they moved from there to a place called Hazarot, which means settlement, which means in a closed, fenced place. After they buried their dead, God now moved them into a place where they would be protected. And they closed like a closed fence or they'd been fenced around about so they would no harm would come to them. And what happened there? They had a time to finish what? They just got to burying an awful lot of people. Time to be at peace. I'm putting you here for time to be at peace. So God says, after I've done my damage, I'm going to have mercy upon you and you're going to have time to grieve. Now, we don't know how leading. We just know this took 40 years to this process. And that's Rimon Perez. Rimon is pomegranate. Which the word pomegranate means to rise up or something that's being raised up. That's what the actual word in Hebrew refers to. And the other one is Perez. Perez. Remember Perez is? The poets, one of the sons of
Judah,
which means a breach. Something was being separated here at this location. Something was being raised and something was being separated. Doesn't tell us what, all we know, that's all it says. That's all it says. Then Rishah, Libna. And that means a place where there is to be made. What was Rachel's brother's name?
Laban.
Laban, white. Now they're being made white. Means to be made white. So after this breach taking place, the next thing was to be made white. Or to be made clean. Put it in that terminology we think of today. Then we come into rishah, which means to moisten, like your oil moistens with flour, giving them something to soften them up. And then the next one is and that just means assemble or to gather yourself together. Then they went to Mount Sephar. What's Mount Sephar mean? Remember? It means beauty, a peaceful place, a goodly place, a place of pleasing, a wonderful place. You see the pattern? Now there's positive, negative, negative, positive, positive. Whatever the pattern is, we see that God has told Moses, make sure you write down the names of these places so people remember. There was time I was merciful. I am very merciful. I'm very kind. I will protect. But he told Moses in the very beginning, I will not overlook those who are guilty. They're going to pay rebelling against me. Going against me, I will do it. And that's the second time Moses went to the mountain. Not the first time, the second time. Because Moses says, I don't know who you are. And so he told him who he was. I am merciful and kind and peaceful, but I will not hold innocent those who are guilty. They will be punished. And that should tell us in the very beginning how God works. And that statement alone, second time on the mountain. Okay, now we went, I'm real mad now. Okay, and then, Charadah. There it means fear, anxiety, trembling, and being afraid. Anxious, being afraid. And then the next word is the same thing as the one before, a place of assembly. So they assembled together. Peaceful place, but they went to a place that terrified and trembling and scared them. They went to another place, but there's another place of trembling. They assembled themselves together, where, of course, God spoke to them. And then, Tekrah. Under part or to depress or to humble. Oh. God was humbling them. In order for you or me to have to be a humble person, I can speak from experience, you have to be humiliated. Once you realize that God is humiliating you, what are you going to do? You have what choices? Either rebel or humble yourself. And in this particular case, they were humiliated and they became humble. For whatever reason, we don't know the story. It didn't tell us the story. We just know a pattern was there. And Moses was told, write it down, name that place, make sure you get the name right. And he got it right. And then he goes to the next one, which is Terach, which means literally delay. Something was delayed, something was stopped, something did not keep on going. Do not know what it is, whether God delayed his plan or they think it God delayed. Do you remember what happened? Moses was up on the first mountain too long? Delayed his coming. Okay, that's good. So it's really not God delaying, it's that the people probably were complaining that delaying the time going into the promised land. Now, there were a couple of men from the tribe of Reuben, two brothers, who accused Moses of being an inadequate leader and didn't lead them into the promised land. That's kind of like one of those times you delayed. People doing the delay. What happened? Earthquake opened up. Down went. So it's not God delaying. Yes. By the way, it's also the name of Abram's father that is to Terah. Why his name delays? Because God stopped him. Took the life of his son. Stopped him. Remember his son, Terah was to continue on in the land of Canaan. And he got so far and his firstborn son was killed. It stopped him. He didn't go anymore. He was delayed. But not because he shouldn't have kept going. He was not supposed to go. I know a lot of, my personal opinion, I'm sorry if you disagree with me, but in the Jewish world, they look at Terah as one of the worst people ever in the face of the earth. And Abram was the most righteous of the bunch that he got out of there, and he destroyed all the wicked things. It doesn't say that biblically. Just his name means delayed. That's it. No more. And if you want to add something to it, go ahead and add to it. If you want to add something to it, the story that makes it kind of fascinating, then go ahead and add to it. However, let's leave it like it is. God had in mind to do something with Abram, and we have learned. Next place they left was Michan, which means sweetness, or the one to become sweet, or a pleasant place. And then we talked about this today, and it's Kushmonhah, which means fatness or fertile place. Then Mosirot means the bonds, being corrected, being chastised, being disciplined. And then Ben Yachar, the twisting, let him oppress them. So God was doing some more, just not only that place to be corrected. Now he put more pressure upon them in this particular next location. And Horgidad, this cave of Gilead, and then a place of to cut or to slash or to an attack or an invasion took place. Don't know what took place there. But the next place was what? Yochbatha. Pleasantness. A good place. So after all that negative, God took them to a place that was nice and pleasant and wonderful. You see a pattern? How God works. I said before, and I'll say it again, sometimes we have a tendency to say the reason why the Israelites did not get into the promised land is because they did this, they did that, they did this, they're rebellious, they're angry, they're hostile toward God, they wanted this, they wanted that. I'm seeing something different. I'm seeing how God had something well planned out. And sometimes we don't understand the plan of God because we as individual human beings have a tendency to create our own image of God the way we like God to be rather than the way God is. And, you know, it's hard sometimes, but I'm looking at this story. We don't need to go on here. We'll go on to the where Moses, I mean, Aaron died and so on and so forth. And the fascinating thing about these events is that I see God's patience, his anger, his discipline, his compassion, his love, his protection, his guiding, his mad, his angry, protection, guiding. What else is new with God? At the feast, I'll try to make a point. I hope I made a point reasonably made sense. And I think from hearing from some of you, you're beginning to not see what you are doing. You're beginning to see what God is doing with you and in you in your life. Yes, you can see sin, wickedness, iniquity, and all that kind of stuff. But you got to see what God does. You got to see that this is the true love of God. The true love of God is, I will discipline you. I will chastise you. Yeah, I know you won't believe me, but I'm doing this because I love you. Therefore, I'm punishing you. And sometimes the punishment can last for 40 years. Ooh, it's a long time, isn't it? But during that 40-year period, there's blessings and cursings, bad and good, good and bad, shelter, no shelter, exposed, no exposure, death. So we learn from all these things. And these things here are for our understanding, right? We look back and we say, okay, let's get past Numbers. That's a lot of words in there, a lot of nouns in there, a lot of verbs in there, a lot of everything in there. Let's just move on and let's move up to Matthew. Let's go to Paul. Okay. And some of us may say, well, let's get to Revelations. Okay. No, let's start where it started at. We have started in the book of Genesis, remember? Read along detail. And if that so becomes so embedded within us that we know if someone is telling us something that's not true, we don't have to correct them. Our job is not to correct them if they got it wrong. Our job is to say, I know what the Eternal said. I'm going to live with what the Eternal said. I'm going to walk with Him, talk with Him, and be with Him. And if somebody else doesn't see it, it's because the eyes have not been opened yet. I know every one of you in this room, you can almost picture the time when the light just clicked. Oh my, that's not what God had in mind, but I believed it really was. I believed really God had, you know, Easter was the most fantastic time. No, it wasn't. The light's on. It's And you say, I don't want to see it anymore, and you no longer participate anymore. But can you tell the people that praises and glorifies things, the greatest thing? The resurrection is very, very important. Well, yes, it was. However, it's overshadowed by one of the most corrupt things you could have. And, quote, the birth of Messiah, birth of Jesus, well, what are the birth of Jesus? Wonderful, okay, gifts, whatever. Wonderful time. This is the most wonderful time of the year, right? That song, I don't remember the name of the song, but the phrase in there is the most wonderful time of the year. And guess what? It's all centered around, oh, the birth of the Messiah. No, that has nothing to do with the birth of the Messiah. That has to do with Saturnalia. Oh, how old is that? Long before Messiah was ever born. Way, way, way back. And 11 days of Christmas. I wonder where that came from. Pagan. See, lights on. Oh, got the picture. And you no longer participated. However, what do you do with your friends? Mm-hmm. Family members? Mm-hmm. Do you attack them? Or do you wait upon the Lord? As waiting until He reveals the light to them. How are you to be a light in the world? Let me ask you a question. Show and tell. What's that doing? It's a light. Does it talk? Does it say anything? What does it do? It just shows light. It doesn't tell me, by the way, Richard, you're dirty. Richard, you're filthy. I don't see that. It tells me, and I look at it myself and it says, the light's showing me that I've got a dirty shirt on. I better go change it, you know, whatever the thing may be. But it doesn't tell me I have one on. It's showing me. It's my action, my doing, what I do makes me, and the Messiah, and the book of Leviticus talks about this, be you holy because I am holy. Be you clean because I am clean. He always had, you know, we have this candle thing here, right? Yeshua is the light of the world. Okay, we do that in the new moon thing. We always say those things. What's he showing us? God is show and tell, show and tell, show and tell. So when you read the words of God, it's showing you something. Showing how you should live and how I should live and how we should be. It doesn't have to say very many words. That's why the Bible is not really as thick as human books are. How many hold this, a dictionary at home? How many have a dictionary at home?
Sure.
Okay. How many have got a dictionary that thick?
No.
How many have a dictionary about that thick? How about the ones that are really big, thick ones?
Sure.
That's in the library, you know, because you got to pick them up and pack them around.
Right.
And that's just words, words, words. It doesn't show you anything. It just tells you the definitions, but doesn't show you anything. In the Word of God, by going through what we're seeing here, those locations, it's going to come up and show you what God does. And what God is doing, not what he did do, but what he is doing. So I'm glad that this 33rd chapter is over with, right? Any questions? Any thoughts? I want to make one more comment. I said that I got 40 rather than 42. I'll tell you why. Because, number one, they count Ramses, and at the very end of the book, 30th, the very last part of the book, talk about Jordan, they were by the Jordan, and they were between two places, the house of desolation and the meadows of Acacia. It says they camped by the Jordan River at two locations at the same time. It apparently was. I don't know. But if you put those together as one, then you have, and don't count Ramses because they didn't journey to there. They journeyed from there. Then you have a total of 40. But if you add Ramses and separate these two to two other ones and the one where they camped along Jordan River, then you have 42. So there's a 40 and 42. It's how you want to look at things, okay? I kind of look at it a little bit different, but I could be wrong. 40 is a very interesting number. And 42 doesn't seem to be fitting anything in what I understand from Scripture. All right?